So for the next month, I want to start a series for non-developed. Just by the way, we'll be here the next, I think, 3 weeks. And then September 8th, we'll be back at the JCC.
Don't they finish the renovation by then?
Yeah, they told me I can come back September 8th.
Oh, so good.
I don't know if we'll be in the middle of the renovation or after the renovation, but either way, we're invited back at that point.
Okay.
So, but for the month of Elul, I wanted to start as just a little different. We're starting a series on mitos, on character, building up character traits. And Elul is a time of the year. Rosh Chodesh Elul was last Shabbos, so we're now, I guess, on the third of Elul. And it's a time we're supposed to improve, focus on our actions, return to God, a time of tshuva, repentance. And Elul is a time, not only are we supposed to focus on it, but God guarantees extra divine assistance. So it's kind of like, I guess the analogy I would use, sometimes you have these campaigns where they say there's a matching donation. You give $10, there's a donor who will match your donation. So during Elul, it's a similar thing. Hashem says, you take a step closer to me, and then I will match that step, I'll come closer to you. There's the famous acronym which is used for Elul, Ani Ladodi Vadodi Li, is the first letter is from the month of Elul, I am to my beloved is to me, which means that there is a mutual closeness which comes between God and the Jewish people during the month of Elul. So that closeness is that God says, if you become to me, I'll become to you. You take a step towards me, I'll take a step towards you. And our task of tshuva, which applies all year long, is much easier during Elul. So if there's areas of life we want to improve upon, this is the time really to focus on. This is the time where things should succeed in a much more effective way than the rest of the year. God's ready for us, you know, God's open, and this is the time which can really change. Our year should really be based on this time. Now, the reason that this month occurs now is because Rosh Hashanah is the time of judgment, Yom Kippur. During those 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, God decides the rest of our year. And we want God to decide our year, you know, in a favorable way. We request from God goodness and blessing and life. And our part to earn a proper judgment for the year is if we repent and return to God, God then will respond with that judgment for a good year. If we don't do our bit, then we have nothing to show God. We plead to God, Rosh Hashanah, please seal us for the book of life. Seal us for a year of blessing. But God says, well, what have you done for me? What do you have to show for yourself? So Elul is a time where we try to show God that we are trying to grow, become better people, come closer to Him, and with that, God will respond with the year of blessing. The idea of mitos, character traits. Character traits are really the foundation of living as a Jew. There's a famous concept, we say, derech eretz kamal Torah, that being a person who acts as we'll call it a mensch, a person who acts with fine mitos, who acts properly, with good character, that is a prerequisite for the Torah. You know, there are religious laws, there are interpersonal relationships that we have, and the Torah says that there's a prerequisite. If you want to be someone who's a servant of God, you have to act like a mensch. You have to be somebody who's able to interact with others in a meaningful, respectful, kind, compassionate way. And if you can't interact with others in that way, so you're missing a prerequisite to the entire Torah. As I mentioned before, there is this concept of giving. It's funny, because most months of the year, we don't spend too much time explaining the name of the month. When it comes to the month of Elul, if you look at different commentaries, they go at length explaining what does the word Elul stand for. And you find many, many different commentaries trying to form an acronym of the word Elul. In Hebrew, Elul is Aleph, Lamed, Vav, Lamed. So you mentioned before, Ani Ladodi, Vadodi, Li, that's one of the famous acronyms for Elul. I'm to my beloved is to me. And one of the acronyms given is Ish L'Re'ehu Matnos L'Avyonim. It's quoting from the Megillah, Esther, and it says a person should give gifts, a man to his friend, and gifts to the poor. So, Ani Ish L'Re'ehu, Aleph Lamed, U'Matnos L'Avyonim is Vav Lamed. That forms the word Elul. Right? So one of the acronyms given from the month of Elul is this idea of how it interacts with others. Gifts to others and gifts to the poor. How we treat our friends, how we treat associates, and how we interact with the poor is part of what Elul is all about. It's a time when we say, teshuva, tefillah, and tzedakah. Repentance, prayer, and tzedakah, those are the keys for God's removed evil decree. So one of those is tzedakah. But tzedakah isn't only money, tzedakah is how we interact with people in a larger sense. So this is a time to focus on many areas of life, but one focus is in the area of interpersonal relationships, and that's what I'd like to focus on over the next few weeks. the idea of mitos in general, we'll try to introduce today what are mitos. How do we understand the term mitos? What do mitos mean? We'll try to maybe give some examples today. But in truth, so mitos typically we look at as how to interact with other people.
How to what?
Interact with other people. But really, mitos can be looked at on many levels. In Jewish thought, the Maharal is a famous concept. The Maharal says that in many areas of the Torah, you can look at it kind of on three planes. Kind of sort of like, I don't know, call it a triangle or something. It's how do you interact, how is it applied between you and God, how is it applied between you and other people, and how is it applied between you and yourself. And we have to grapple with our relationship with God, we have to relate to others, we have to relate to ourselves. And you have to, there's three different dimensions in which you have to be a servant of God, be a good person, and do the right thing. The idea of midos really applies on all three levels. Because in terms, obviously, let's just take an example. Being a kind person, that's something we'll talk about today, hopefully. So being a kind person, chesed. So obviously chesed applies between us and our fellow human being. Because chesed is, how do you care for other people? But chesed also helps you to relate with God. Because doing chesed to others, it reflects upon how do you view the world. How do you view how God created this human being. This human being has something special to offer. This human being is significant and valuable. And that's why I do chesed to that person. If people were not valuable, if they were insignificant, then why should I go my way to help that person? But saying that I'm helping a person is saying that this person is a creation of God. God runs the world, and God deems this person to be significant, therefore I'll treat them properly. I mean, there is that subtle understanding of how God runs the world when we do chesed. And then between us and ourselves, it's a perspective on life. It's not just, well, your person needs help, I help you. How do I view life? How do I view other people? How selfish am I? How arrogant am I? Do I see beyond myself, or am I closed in my little bubble? You know, that's so it has to do with our own perspective as well. So any mida you take isn't just how do you treat other people. It really applies on all levels. How do you grapple with yourself? How do you relate to God? And then certainly primarily and most obviously, how do you interact with others? That's the idea of midos. It's very interesting, in the Torah, you don't really find any explicit command for having good mitos, for being a good person. The Torah, we have 613 mitzvos, and the mitzvos, there's what we call religious law, there's interpersonal law, there's monetary law, not to damage others, there's a mitzvah to love other people, you do find that, to love other Jews, but you don't find specific commands on many, many mitos. We all could agree that, you know, somebody who has a very, very sharp temper, that's something negative. There's nowhere in the Torah that says you cannot have a temper. We all would probably agree that being somebody who's arrogant is, you know, that's inappropriate. But you're not going to find anything explicit in the Torah that says you shall not be arrogant. You don't find an explicit prohibition in the Torah not to be arrogant. A lot of these mitos, you don't find anywhere in the Torah. So where do you find that the Torah commands us to be good people, to act like a mensch, to have that the proper approach to others? So, number one, they said before, it's kind of a prerequisite to the Torah. The Torah doesn't mention it because it's kind of an expectation. Prior to becoming a good Jew, you have to be a good person. But beyond that, the commentaries point out there is a mitzvah in the Torah to be a good person. And that mitzvah is called the halachta bidracham. You should go in God's ways. And the rabbis explain, just like God is good, you should be good. God is kind, you should be kind. God is merciful, you should be merciful. God is holy, you should be holy. And our goal to emulate God is the concept of having good mitos. So we know the Torah describes God with many adjectives, and many glowing terms. And it says you should follow in God's ways. So therefore, all those beautiful terms we use in the Torah to describe God, that's supposed to be our goal. We're supposed to act in that way as well. So that's the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of the Torah called the halachta midrachav, you should go in God's ways. And this mitzvah tells us you're supposed to emulate God's ways, which, again, you can open up your Torah and you can read God's ways, and you should emulate those ways. And that seems to be the basis of mitos in terms of Torah obligations. The Rambam, Maimonides, he points out that all of these different labels you find in the Torah, as we mentioned, he's compassionate, he's merciful, he's patient, he's straight, he's honest, he's strong, all those things we find in the Torah, those labels are really indications to us that we should act in that manner. I mean, we don't have to describe God with adjectives. Why does the Torah bother describing God's ways? I mean, just God did this. This is what God does. The Torah gives God all these adjectives. It's trying to teach us a lesson that that's the proper way for a human being to act. So when the Torah says that God is is Chanun Verachu. He's compassionate and merciful. So we're not just trying to shower labels upon God. We actually shy away from defining God, because God's infinite. You can't define God. You can't box God in just one mitzvah. But the point is, we're supposed to learn from that that we should be compassionate and merciful. And, that, and that's the concept of going in God's ways. And even further, this is a little philosophical, but it's important to add in. You know, when we call God patient, you know, one of the labels for God is Erech HaPayim, which means He's patient. That's patient with us. We don't have lightning bolts striking us down every single moment. God gives us time to repent. You know, He waits for us to do the right thing. So it doesn't mean that, well, it doesn't mean a human being is patient. It means that I want to lose my temper, I want to blow up, but you might hold back. All right? That's what we're in human terms. But it's not like God has a temper and God's going to explode at us and He holds Himself back. You know, again, God's infinite. If God doesn't want things to happen as they are, He can just make them vanish. I mean, there's no temper that He's trying to control or hold back. Again, the idea is for us that God is trying to show us a lesson as how we're supposed to act. When it says that God was patient with us, it means that if you're a human being, requires feedback. And the feedback at this point should be patience. That's what it means. But it doesn't mean that God is grappling with the temper versus patience. He has to pull back His anger. It doesn't mean that. So the Torah might describe it in human terms because we have to be able to understand what God's doing. But from God's perspective, it's all the same. It's not that God has a temper He has to control. It's that God is showing us the proper reaction in a situation like this is patience. So if we're involved in a similar situation, I mean, usually the situation in the Torah is that the Jews are doing something wrong. We're God's children, we're not following His rules, and God has to have patience with us. So to take it into human terms, see, people who are supposed to be following your directions, and they're not following your directions. So the human reaction at that point should be patience. So there, and we learn that from God. But and this is a bigger philosophical concept, but the point being that we never compartmentalize God into a certain mitos on His own right. We don't say that God doesn't have human reactions. God is infinite and God is beyond our ability to define. But anytime you find these different midos describing God, the point is that these are the reactions that God is teaching us to have in our own lives. That's what we have to do with. And sometimes God does get angry. Right? The Torah says several times God got angry at the people. Right? We say it in Shema, V'chara af Hashem, that God's anger flared up. And again, it doesn't mean that God lost His temper. What it means is that in this situation, anger is called for. Because there are times in life where a human being should get angry. We're not saying that anger should never happen. There are times where anger is appropriate, and we'll talk about when that may be. But when we see God get angry, it's because that situation that calls for anger, we should emulate that. That's what it means. We can understand the situation, but we have to emulate that. The Sefer HaChinuch writes that the concept of emulating God and developing good midos applies in so many areas of life. It says it applies in the way we eat and drink. You know, don't be gluttonous. You know, share with others. Have patience, have self-control, have moderation. It applies, obviously, in the direction of people. It is both in the realm of religious life and mundane life. So how do you interact with a friend in the workplace? How do you interact with a neighbor? How do you interact with of someone who you sit next to in shul, during services? I mean, how do you interact with the person you're studying Torah with? What's the proper reaction? How do you interact with a rabbi, a student? How do you interact with a repairman that comes to your house? I mean, it applies in all areas of life, the idea of midos. You can't box into one area. It applies everywhere. One other important point about midos, where do midos come from? I mean, we all know people seem to have, everyone's different. They have different characteristics. And some people have worse tempers, and some people are very, very calm. Some are more stingy, and some are more generous. And some people are more arrogant, some are more humble. And everyone has their own mixture of midos. And everyone has to deal with their own issues. And no one's perfect. We all have our own midos to deal with. And where does it all come from? So the Rambam tells us some interesting things. The Rambam says some midos are inborn in people. So sometimes, everyone's born naturally with certain inclinations. There's certain, they're predisposed towards certain mitos that we all have. Some mitos pick up along the way. So we live life, we view others around us, and whether it be intentionally, or whether it be kind of just a subtle osmosis, but mitos kind of drip into us. And the surroundings make a big difference. You know, Americans may have different mitos than Europeans. or Asians, and it's because the society around also impacts them. So we have our inborn character traits. We have those that are picked up from around. And some of them will pick up more easily. Some will purposely develop during life. Sometimes we intentionally develop them either, which ideally is the goal.
Teaching children,
right? Is it? Some are taught. You know, parents try to teach their children midos. You know, we try to teach and we try to grow into certain midos. So midos come from a lot of directions. You know, there's a lot of ways to have midos. I mean, the challenge especially is the ones which are inborn, because if you have inborn midos which are challenging, you have to somehow grapple with them, and that's one of the biggest challenges. But even ones we picked up along life, it's very hard to cast off a mita which we've gained. So sometimes they're positive, sometimes they're negative mitos. It's very hard to get away from a negative mita which we've absorbed. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the founder of the Musar movement, he was quoted to say that it's really easier to master the entire Talmud than to change one mita in a person. That's what he said. Because it's a lifetime work. You know, if somebody is arrogant, to develop humility is very, very difficult. If somebody is stingy, to become generous is very difficult. You know, it's a mountain to climb. That's what it is. It doesn't mean it's impossible. I mean, it's a very hard job. But we have to know, as we said before, that there's a mitzvah, there's an obligation in the Torah to emulate God and to develop good character and good midos. At times we view it as kind of, it's like a nice thing. It's good to be a nice person. But the Torah says, no, it's an obligation to be a nice person. So just like we work towards following the Torah's laws in other areas of life, we have to constantly be working on becoming nicer, better people. And that's something which is an obligation upon us. The Rambam writes as well. The Rambam has his greatest work, the Mishnah Torah. It's 14 different sections about the entire gamut of halakha. This is really his magnum opus. And people quote the Rambam, more often than not they're quoting from this work. And the Rambam has a section on midos, and he refers to it as Hilchos Deos, the laws of Deos. Now the word Deos comes from like Da's, knowledge. And you would have said, if you were just to look at the top of the book, you'd say these are the laws of knowledge, or the laws of perspectives or something. And he refers to midos always as Deos. That's how the Rambam refers to midos. So why would he refer to midos as Deos? Because midos ultimately become our mindset. It's who we are. If it's something that you do, but it's not part of it, it's not really your mita, it's just an action you do. Now, let's just say, again, to go back to our example. Let's say somebody ultimately is a selfish person, but you know they know it's nice to reach out to others. So they give tzedakah, they help others, but that's not their mindset, that's not their perspective, it's the actions they do. But what's their mindset? I'm selfish. That's the mindset. And whenever you're helping others out, you're resentful of it, it's annoying, you know, it takes a toll on you because it's not you. When we say when Rambam calls them deos, one level of that is that a true mita becomes the mindset of the person, the perspective the person takes on life. And even though they may do other things, that's because they're fighting with that mita, but it's not who they are. We are our mitas, we are our character. And I'm sure a psychologist can tell you a lot more than I can about this, but it's true. We see it, we experience it, we know it. And the idea of a mita is that it's an innate part of a person. It's a thought process that we have, a perspective of life that we have. It's in control of us, and we strive to control it. But it's who we are. It's part of who we are. The Gemara tells us that a person constantly needs to assess and balance their midos, moderate their midos. And the Rambam is famous for this, and he talks about it at length, that no one mita is inherently bad or good. All midos are good in balance, in moderation. So, is it good to be stingy? Well, not always, but sometimes. You know, if you give away all your money and you can't support yourself, and you have to go begging at the door, at people's doors, so that's negative. Is it good to be generous? Well, yeah, it's good to be generous, but you have to make sure that you're giving it to the right people. You have to make sure that, like you said, you're reserving money for yourself and for your own personal needs, because we don't want you to have to become a beggar. Is it good to have a temper? Usually not, but sometimes anger is called for. How are you ever going to... You know, let's say someone does something which truly needs to be corrected and they're not listening. Let's say you have to discipline children or students, so then anger might be called for. Every mita is good in moderation, in control, the Rambam says. But the challenge is in the balance. That's the challenge. So the Talmud tells us you have to constantly assess and balance your midos. That's the concept, that we have to be able to see that midos themselves are more or less neutral. I mean, some might be more often than not negative, some more often than positive, but more or less every mida has its time and place. And our job, our goal in understanding midos, is to know how to use them properly. That's our goal. Extremes, the Rambam says extremes typically are very negative. If you go to an extreme, any mida is negative. And we have to make sure that we are able to balance and not go to extremes. The Rambam tells us, this is a famous quote, that the straight path, the proper path, is the middle path, that the Rambam says. When it comes to midos, the middle path is usually the right path. And the idea of being in the middle path, it doesn't mean that you're not an extremist. It means that you know how to keep the balance. That's what it means. You can understand the idea of, like, let's take the analogy. You're driving on the road. You want to stay in your lane. So staying in your lane means you have to keep control of the wheel. Because if you let go of the wheel, you're going to veer off one way or the other. So the middle path doesn't mean that you never, ever employ or use a mida. It just means that you're in control of your mida. That's what it means. You're trying to stay on the straight path. That's what it means. So the so our goal when we talk about midos, so we're going to try to do, we're trying to define a certain midos. We're trying to understand where do they come from in a person, what is how can we work on improving in that area. But the goal of a person is to learn how to make the balance and to utilize what they have. And that's it. When we're out of control, that's because our midos are just taking over us. Our goal is that we're able to control our midos. That's our goal. The Rambam does say, though, the Rambam says there are certain areas where, you know, swaying a little bit towards one side actually is positive. He says when it comes to arrogance, for instance. When it comes to arrogance and humility, you don't want to stay in the middle. You want to kind of swerve off towards the humility side of it. He says that also with anger. When it comes to anger, you don't want to stay in the middle. You want to kind of swerve towards patience. You know? So sometimes you want to be a little bit off of the middle. But again, the point is the proper control. That's the point. I'll share with you an interesting quote in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the humility... So the Rambam tells us that arrogance is something you want to avoid, usually, and you want to kind of veer off towards humility. But humility at times can be destructive. Now we know that Moshe was called the most humble of all men. So that was a great virtue of Moshe. But the Talmud tells us that the humility of Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulis caused destruction of the temple. Now, what's the story we're talking about? There's a story in the Gemara that this is the famous story, which you may have heard around Tisha B'Av time, about Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. Mm-hmm. Famous story, right? And just in short, on Kamsa and Bar Kamsa, there was a party, and one person got invited, and the host of the party got upset and threw the guy out, and he embarrassed the guy, and the rabbis at the party didn't say anything. So there was a terrible, he was humiliated, this fellow. And the fellow was humiliated because he's thrown out of this party. He wanted to go and incite the Roman government against the Jews. So he goes to the Roman government and he says, I'm going to show you the Jews are rebelling against you. Send in a sacrifice to the temple. You'll see they won't offer your sacrifice. So he says, fine. He gives him the sacrifice. And this Jew who was humiliated, who was trying to incite the Romans against the Jews, he put a blemish in the sacrifice. One that would invalidate it for sacrificial service. And he brings it to the temple, and the rabbis are debating what to do. They said, on the one hand, it's a blemish. It's actually invalid for sacrifice. On the other hand, if we don't offer it, the Romans are going to think that we're rebelling, and they're going to come in and fight against us. So it says that Rabbi Zechariah ben Apkulis was there, and he says, we can't offer the sacrifice. It's invalid. Now, the Gemara then tells us, because of that, the Romans thought that we were rebelling against them, and they came in to fight against us. And that began the whole war, and then led to the destruction of the temple. That's what the Gemara tells us. And the Gemara believes on the humility of Rabbi Zechariah. Now, why is his humility? I mean, he was trying to stick to the halacha. The halacha says he can't offer the sacrifice. It's invalid. He was trying to stick to what he thought was right. Why do we call it humility? The answer is because sometimes, if you're too humble, you're not willing to stand up against the norm. You say, who am I to make such a big decision? The Torah says you can offer the sacrifice. Now we know when it comes to a risk to the entire Jewish people, when it comes to risk to human life, you are allowed to violate the Torah. But to make that decision, I'm going to decide that am I big enough, am I confident enough to decide that I'm going to discard a halacha to save the Jews? I'm too scared to make that decision. It was his humility which made him hold back and not make a drastic move. And because of that humility, the Romans came to attack us. So sometimes humility, if it doesn't allow you to stand up when you're required to stand up, you say, who am I? If you act too meek and too humble at a time where we need you to stand up and act with confidence, that's destructive. So again, every mida, even though usually humility is considered a tremendous virtue, but every once in a while, humility will come to haunt us, you know, because a person did not stand up at a time of need. They didn't have the confidence and the self, you know, the self-worth to be able to stand up and say, we have to make a drastic move, let's do it. So that's the story of Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkulis. So this is a general intro to midos. Now there's a few other points I want to make in terms of an introduction. How do we train ourselves? I mean, all of us have our mix of midos. All of us do. Everyone is born, like you said, you're born with them, you pick them up along the way. Everyone has that mix of midos that they're grappling with. And how do we train ourselves to be different? If we don't yet, so one point is, the Rambam says, that if you don't yet feel that you're changing, you have to keep on doing the actions again and again and again. So for instance, a simple example, somebody knows that they're very stingy. They have a lot of trouble giving away money or time or helping others. So you give tzedakah, you give tzedakah again, you give it again, you give it again, and you still don't feel a difference. You feel, okay, I'm going through the action, but is my perspective on life different? Do I feel like I'm a kinder person or not? So the Rambam says that the more times you go through the action, it will actually become easier and it will seep into you. It will help you become a different person. And again, our goal is to not do chesed, to be kind. Our goal is to become kind people. There's a big difference between doing the action and becoming a kind person. So, but the actions lead to a change in the person. It says in Pirkei Avos, that everything goes according to the abundance of deeds. And the Rambam says that means that a person changes based on the abundance of deeds that they do. And this is where the Rambam says a famous concept that, again, all things equal, it's better to give $1 to tzedakah 100 times than $100 one time. Again, it needs to balance the needs and the situation, etc. But all things equal, if you give $1 100 times, then that's training you to become a kind person, because you've gone through the action of giving away your money 100 times. But if you give $100 one time, it's the same amount of money going to tzedakah, but you only did one action, so it's not going to impact you in the same way. You have to go over it again and again and again and again. As you go over it, you do that action again and again and again, slowly it changes you. So that's the famous story of Rabbi Akiva looking at the water dripping on the rock and making a hole in the rock. So Rabbi Akiva became a Torah scholar because he was inspired by seeing water penetrating a rock. Well, one drop of water will do a thing to a rock. It has to drip again and again and again and again. And eventually it eats away at the rock. Or as I saw a few years ago, it makes a Grand Canyon. That's how, you know, the river beats away at the rock. And I was thinking about Rabbi Akiva. I was thinking about. So one method of improving ourselves in midos is doing the action which we're trying to train ourselves in over and over again. And it doesn't need to be major, it can be small actions. Giving that dollar 100 times, but you're training yourself, I give away my money. I give money. Others need help. I help others. And the more and more you do it, the more it impacts the person. Another method, another technique you can use in order to improve midos, the Rambam says, is at times we have to go to the opposite extreme. So for instance, let's go with the same example. Person is a greedy person. And they know they want to become more generous. So sometimes you have to spend some time going to an extreme of generosity in order to kind of balance out the scale. So you want the pendulum to kind of swing back into the middle. So a person, you know, doesn't want to give any money, but they know that they're stingy and they want to improve. So you should spend a month being very generous, giving of your money, of your time, of your knowledge. Spend a month really going out to helping people to an extreme. And again, extremes are not good usually, and maybe that month will be very difficult, and you know, it could be that you'll have trouble paying your own bills, who knows, or maybe you'll run out of time at home, it might impact your life for that month. That's an extreme. But when you go to an extreme, that helps to balance you out when that month is over. So if you're an extremely stingy person, you spend a month doing extremely generous and helping deeds, so then hopefully after that month you'll kind of end up somewhere in the middle, which is the goal. That's hopefully what will happen. That's another technique the Rambam says we can use at times to approve our vetoes. Is it take an extreme for a little while? I made up the month. He didn't say a month. But for a while, go to an extreme. And once you go to an extreme, when you step back, hopefully you'll end up somewhere in the middle where you should be. That's what he says. But a very important part about mitos as well is to have a real honest definition and assess what we're doing. Rav Noach Weinberg, who was the founder of Eishet Torah, so passed away, must have been, I don't know, 7-8 years ago now, maybe longer. Rav Noach Weinberg, he has something he used to call the IU He Game. Right? If you ever hear him speak, he's a great speaker. You can get his lectures that are available online. Very powerful speaker. Very colorful person, you know, he was powerful, a personality, he's funny. So he was the founder of Eishet Torah, and he had something he used to call the IU He Game. And like, for instance, he would say that, so when you're talking about yourself, you might explain a mita in one way. When you're speaking to a person who's with you, you might explain it a different way. If you're speaking about a third party, you'll explain it a different way. So for instance, you'll say, I'm strong-willed. You're stubborn. He's big-headed. You know, and it goes to an extreme. It says that, you know, I'm brave. You know, you're a little bit foolhardy. And he's a lunatic. You know, like, that's... You'll say, I'm trying to think of some examples. He says, I'm educating you. And then he'll say, no, you're trying to persuade me. And I'll say, yeah, he's getting brainwashed. Like, you know, and you use the terms. So you have to define your terms. And you have to know, have an honest assessment. Something which I do and I'll think is a great thing. If I see you doing it, I look at it a little bit askance. I see him doing it, then I'll say, yeah, that guy's crazy. Right? So it takes an honest assessment of terms and of midos in order to grow in this area. And the midos have many, many applications and nuances. And, you know, do we say person is, you know, savvy with his money, or is he greedy? Which one is it? Is he a cheapskate? Maybe he's being, he's wise, and he's responsible, but he's a cheapskate. How do you know which one it is? You have to define the terms. It's very important. Is a person brave, or is he a lunatic? Again, you have to define the terms. What does it mean to be brave? What does it mean to be a lunatic? You know, is a person stubborn, or is he strong-willed? So again, define the terms, define the mida, and figure out that maybe you call it him pig-headed, maybe you're pig-headed. Maybe he's strong-willed. Who knows? Who knows what he is? But it means we have to define our terms honestly, make an assessment of what is the proper mida we're heading towards, where do we stand, what is the mida exactly, what is the term, what does it mean? Is a person, is he standing up for the truth, or is he losing his temper? Which one? You know, is he a fanatic, or is he somebody who is a truth seeker? I mean, you find this, I hate it in the media, when you have the different, so some people will call the Palestinians militants, or some will call them freedom fighters, some call them terrorists, right? Well, which one is it, a freedom fighter, a militant, or a terrorist? Which one, you know? So, I mean, you hate to think it's just a political label. You like to look at it objectively. And say, what is a freedom fighter? What's a terrorist? You know, hopefully you can find an objective way to look at it. We have to define those terms. So, so let's just go back. This is the big intro. But the intro to mitos is that mitos are something which are pervasive in all areas of life. It's not just how you treat others, but it's the perspective you have on the world in front of you. It has to do with the relationship of God. It has to do with how we see ourselves. Mitos are things which are either inborn or picked up along the way. They're very difficult to change. But the goal is always to reach the proper balance. That's the goal. The extremes typically are negative and should be avoided. At times they may be necessary, but typically extremes should be avoided. And ultimately, our goal in the world of mitos is to be able to define what they are, to understand where we stand vis-a-vis that mida, and to learn how to strike the proper balance. I'll add one more point, and then we'll stop with this for the day, which is that the Rambam points out, and it's based on the Talmud, that let's say you do have an inborn mida. So some midos are going to be nearly impossible to change about a person, but you can channel them and use them in the proper way. So there's a famous passage in the Gemara. It says that a person, there's some people who are born with a natural predisposition towards blood, right? This person, you know, so that person could become a murderer. That person could become a moel and do bris milah, right? Or a surgeon. Well, can be a surgeon. That person might end up being a shochet. The person might end up being, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. So some people cannot stand blood and can't go near it and, you know, would never ever dare take a life or make a cut in the person. But some people are born with the ability that, you know, they don't mind making a cut or killing a person. And some people are born with, you know, there's a certain drive which, you know, they're excited to become a soldier. We know people like this. Everyone knows people like that. But so how do you channel that drive? So you can become a bloodthirsty murderer, and that's channeling it towards the world of evil. You can become a mohel, and you can be doing a mitzvah with it by giving babies a bris. You can become a soldier and use it in positive ways or negative ways, depending on what kind of soldier you are. But Amida is able to be channeled in the proper way. So even those midos that are inborn and cannot be changed or nearly impossible to change. I think there's conflicting sources in Jewish thought if there's any mita which cannot be changed. Seemingly every mita could be changed in some way, but some are very difficult. But once you have that mita, it's a matter of how you channel that mita.
What personality bonds, if you have children, and I'm sure all your children are not the same, that
right.
Some of them are just so docile and some of them are more active and whatever.
Right.
And that's the way the person usually is. That
right.
Doesn't usually change.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right. That personality is there, but
yeah.
As much as how do you use it, you know? How do you use a personality? I mean, sometimes the kid who in school is the worst challenge for teacher and ends
but
up most of the time in principal's office. Well, that's, I would say something else. I would say that person may become the most successful person in business
right.
20 years down the road
right.
because they're using that same, you know, go-getter attitude and the lack of fear in front of audience, whatever it is, in order to do something different, to do something positive with it. It could be the person who's very, very, you know, calm and docile. That person might end up being a great researcher, could sit at a desk and read. And, you know, you can use the mita for what it is. Let's use it for. You do have to go to kids that are different at home than school as well. But I wasn't even going in that direction.
Yeah.
But the point is that any mita which is there, it doesn't necessarily mean it's negative. And a person who has a temper, you have to be in control of your temper. But sometimes you need someone who's able to get up and tell people what's right. You need that sometimes. You know, you have to do it with intelligence and in a wise way and, you know, at the proper time and place, and sometimes, you know, you sometimes need somebody who's able to have extreme patience, you know. You have certain schools or classrooms or teachers that patience, then the whole thing would collapse and it wouldn't work, you know. Every mita has a time and place, and a person who has an inborn mita, which can't be changed, it can be channeled. And channeling it is the right thing to do, and it's positive, and it can be used for the sake of a mitzvah, it can be used to change the world. But it's all based on those mitos that a person has. So, God willing, next week we'll start discussing some specific mitos. And we'll try, we have another 3 weeks, I think, before Rosh Hashanah, so we'll try to choose, you know, a good assortment of mitos to discuss. But it's just be on our mind. This is the time of year where we should be thinking about our own personal character, and where do we stand, you know, how do we fit within the definition of these mitos, and then what can we do to change ourselves and become better people.
Are we going back to the JCC after Yom Kippur?
It'll be the week before Rosh Hashanah.
Oh, the week before?
Yeah.